College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons, with Jacob Lastner producing. And we are joined by a very special guest in studio today, Nat Gordo. You can hear him on WEEI. Baseball isn't boring every week. You can hear him on the Play Tessie podcast. And you may have seen him on Twitter as Boston Sports Gordo, a man of many talents. Nat, welcome in.
Thanks for having me, man. You'd think with that song it was Bradfoe. I'm sorry to disappoint if that's what you were thinking.
No, we said a Brad.
Not Bradfoe.
No, we said a Brad no today. We went to Nat. That's what we did.
But he played the Bradfoe song.
That's true.
He did.
That's true.
Jacob played the Bradfoe song.
We'll forgive it. He's a Mets fan wearing a Red Sox hat. We'll forgive him.
You really a Mets fan?
Yes.
Oh, that's why I was listening on the way, and that's why you said Pete Alonso's your guy. I was like, that's kind of random.
He is truly, I've never seen somebody so dumb and so amazing at baseball.
Pete Alonso.
That's right. My favorite player in the major leagues is Fernando Tatis Jr., and he missed games for PEDs, so I can't really talk.
Yeah, you know. that's a cool guy to have as your fave.
Yeah, he is.
I don't know who my favorite outside of the Red Sox is. I don't know. Maybe Ellie De La Cruz.
Oh, I like.
He's fun.
I like watching him. Seeing him in person, too. I went to one of the games in that Red Series. He's impressive to see in person.
Yeah. He's a freak athlete, and he just I love the guys who they just have these freak skill sets. They step up to the plate. He's got all the gear. He's got all the swag, and like he just commands the ballpark. It's hard to command a ballpark.
Yeah, you got and I think 35K. Tatis Jr. is like that too.
He sure is.
Ohtani, Betts, those guys are like that. So maybe Betts is my favorite non-Red Sox.
That's fair, but that's also cheating.
Yeah, true. So Nat, let's get into where the Red Sox are at right now. And you and I were talking off air that last year you felt good. If you're a Red Sox fan, about the team at the All-Star break. Remember, they're 10 games over. And the wheels fell off in the second half. Now we look at the Red Sox. They've won 9 in a row, including 3 close games, 1-run victories over Tampa Bay, a team that was ahead of them in the standings. And I would kind of argue, even though they're not 10 games over, I feel a little bit better about the Red Sox now than I did at last year's All-Star break.
It is so hard to try to not be a prisoner of the moment, because I keep asking myself, and I did it last year too. I remember last year they went on a great summer run and I said, man, but they did this in 2023. So why is 2024 different? And we came up with all these reasons why 2024 was different, and then it wasn't. So why could this year be different? And it's crazy because you go to the All-Star break and we're saying the same things. The Red Sox have the hardest strength of schedule remaining in baseball. They did last year too. And it at least contributed to doing them in. Why could it be different this year? Well, they've got a much deeper bullpen. The bullpen in the Dodgers and the Rockies series coming out of the break, you had a couple of key relievers go down with injuries, and they were closing games with guys that certainly had never done that before, and guys that, you know, maybe they were pitching well at the time, but you wouldn't necessarily want to trust closing games, and you couldn't finish games against the Dodgers, couldn't finish games against the Rockies. It kind of sent your season into a tailspin. This year, obviously, I mean, Justin Slayton's down, but everyone else in the bullpen is healthy and pitching well. And to the point where even if one or two of them went down, you would feel okay about the guys that you'd have ready to step in. So I feel like that right there is first and foremost why you should feel a little bit better. But again, like, I understand if you want to proceed with caution.
Yeah.
It is really similar.
And my feeling is, like, I feel a little bit better about the Red Sox themselves because, as you said, better bullpen. They're 7th in bullpen ERA. They've gotten, especially over the last month, a lot more length from their starting pitchers. Obviously, Crochet is a complete game yesterday. But remember back in May, right? Bayo couldn't get through 5 innings. Now he's getting through 6 and giving you quality
getting
starts.
Getting through 9.
Getting through 9. Giolito's been giving you deeper starts, which also in turn helps your bullpen. I think the Bregman factor helps a little bit in that it's a guy in your lineup that's been a leader on a World Series champion and won multiple World Series. I think that matters. So I feel better about them than I did last year, but I still look at this schedule, and it's the first place Cubs, the first place Phillies, the first place Dodgers. Not long after that, you have 6 games against the first place Astros, a Padres team that you and I were talking off air, I think is a legit World Series contender despite not being in first place in the NL West. So Can you get through that month of baseball, essentially? So what, July 18th to August 13th. Can you get through about that month of baseball with your head above water? Because last year, you're right. Last year, they fell apart after the All-Star break. Tanner Houck was never the same after Ohtani hit that home run in the All-Star game. The year before, it was the trade deadline. They fell apart in August after that trade. I remember Bernardino was in that game, giving up like 8 runs or whatever. Cora just left him in. I think it was
Bearclaw.
Yeah.
Kyle Bearclaw.
Yeah. Not Bernie.
That was nuts. Yeah, that was the
moment you were
the coffin of that season.
Yeah.
But I'll give you some hope a little bit, because I get it. You've got the Cubs, the Phillies, the Dodgers, first place teams. Actually, the Phillies might have fallen below. Jacob, are you Mets in first place right now?
Yes, they are as of last night.
Okay, so no longer first place Phillies. Last night.
But they are a first place caliber team, but let's talk about how they're playing recently, because to be fair, it's not necessarily about who you face. It's about when you're facing them sometimes. The Cubs, 10-12 in their last 22. The Phillies, 7-10 in their last 17. And the Dodgers, 1-7 in their last 8. So, and obviously the Red Sox, 9-0 in their last 9. So, obviously clean slate after the break. These teams are going to get a chance to go home, refresh, whatever they're going to do over the All-Star break, come back new. And those streaks probably go out the door. I mean, the Red Sox, as you said, they were playing great baseball heading into the break last year. They were kind of neck and neck with the Royals, took 2 out of 3 in a series against them right before the break. You were feeling great. Then you come back from the All-Star break, and even though an Alex Cora extension came soon after that, the vibe was just different. Like, the game was just different for them. So you're going to have to find a way to keep the momentum going, but there is a chance that you might be catching these teams at the right time. Obviously, plenty of time to go before you face, like, say, the Dodgers. Plenty of time for them to get some pitchers back, get Ohtani pitching a little bit deeper into games. But the schedule is tough, but it's not something that this team's incapable of.
And what's encouraging to me is, and you mentioned getting those teams at the right time, these last 3 games against the Rays, you've won close games. And the Red Sox, they're still 12-19 in one-run games, so not good. But 3-0 in their last 3.
Hey, that's way better than it was.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, remember early in the season, they're like 4-9, and I thought that was bad. And the next thing I know, they're 9-19.
Yeah,
like,
we started talking about it, and then they lost maybe like 6 straight one-run games.
Oh, that
like,
one against the Angels a few weeks ago was just brutal.
Yeah.
In that afternoon game at 3-2.
Yeah.
But now they've been a little bit better in those games. And I think the reason they've been better is they're doing a better job on some of those things on the margins, which for years, Nat, they've struggled with. Like, they're getting better pitching. We know that. But I go back to the Rafaela walk-off homer. How about Anthony coming off the bench before that and drawing a walk?
Yeah.
I thought that was huge. Yesterday, Toro blows up that squeeze play. Like, those key little... which
play saved the game.
Right. Those key moments, you're getting good plays from the Red Sox, where I feel like ever since the start of the 2022 season, they were making the wrong play more often than not. Their runners in scoring position average has jumped up to the top half of the league after being near the bottom most of the year until a couple weeks ago. So, I mean, is that something you see as sustainable? Like, are these guys, especially guys like Anthony, Rafaela, who of course is good anyway in the field, but are some of these young guys starting to get it a little bit more on some of the little things?
You know, with a young team, I feel like the way it works with some of these young teams around the league is they get so streaky. So sometimes all you just need to do is get them going, right? Like, and this team, we talked about it for over a month, didn't win more than 2 games in a row. So sometimes all you need is like that little push. You're on a bike, you're learning how to ride a bike, and your dad gives you a little push, and then he lets go, and you keep pedaling, and all of a sudden you're biking down the street, you're getting a little bit faster, you're getting confidence, and all of a sudden you can ride your bike. Like, these guys are learning how to play ball at the big league level. And, you know, when things aren't going right, it can take a toll on your confidence when you haven't done it before at this level. Now you've got a guy like Sadon Rafaela who knows he can own the moment. You've got a guy like Roman Anthony who, he took like a week to figure things out. And
he's hitting .350 in July. Yeah.
Yeah, he's terrific.
And I'm not saying he's going to keep that up, but to your point,
yeah,
it feels like he's figuring it out. Abreu, your best power hitter right now.
Yeah.
Guy has 18 home runs. So since you traded Devers, that's your best power. And still a gold glove caliber outfielder.
Yeah, and so, like, Marcelo Meyer, as confident as can be, wherever you want to put him in the field, he's going to make the play, and he's started to put together much better at-bats. Not that he wasn't putting together good at-bats before, like, he was hitting okay, but he looks a lot more confident at the plate, maybe since that extended stretch where they sat him 4 straight against 4 lefties. But yeah, I mean, it's again, it's a young team, and sometimes all you need is that little 3 or 4 game win streak to just know that you can do it, and just... that's how we're going to do things. We're going to keep it going. And it obviously helps to have a guy like Alex Bregman there to do what he does, pop quiz you on the pitchers you're facing, show you things on the iPad. Like, he's the ultimate leader that this group needed. He was the right guy to bring in at the right time. I'm so thankful that they did that.
Like, I felt like they got pushed to do that a little. Like, Cora was really heavy on that, but I'm glad that he was. And you brought up something that I want to follow up on, because you're right. They're a young team. Young teams can be streaky. And I looked at the lineup yesterday, Nat, and I didn't love it, because I look at, and I know they won, but I look at Rafaela and Abreu. I want those guys in the outfield every single day. Rafaela is the best defensive center fielder in the majors. Abreu, not only your best power hitter, but as I said, Gold Glove caliber outfielder. I think the rotation should be between Yoshida, Duran, and Anthony for DH in left field. You know, like, one day Yoshida sits and, you know, Duran's a DH, Anthony's in left field. Another day, you know, it's Anthony's a DH, whatever, Duran's in left field. I don't know how you, I want to get your thoughts on it, because I don't love the idea of moving Rafaela out of center field and then in turn moving Meyer off second base, where I think he's gotten better and better and better. I hope that's something they get away from after the All-Star break.
Yeah, I mean, if it were up to me, I wouldn't be playing Rafaela at second base at all. I think, even though he's hit the cover off the ball lately, the majority of his value comes from his center field defense. He's as good as they come. He's as good as we've seen since Jackie. He's the best in the league right now. I would keep him there. As for who I would sit, because, like, obviously you've got Rafaela, you've got Duran, you've got Abreu, you've got Anthony, you've got Yoshida. Against right-handed pitching, you can play four of those five names that I just listed out at a time. And it's tough because none of them deserve to sit. And the only one that I'm convinced should not be part of any sort of rotation of, because you're going to have to rotate guys that sit. Like, there's not going to be a guy in that five-man group that's going to sit, what, like, three out of five games? Like, it's just not going to happen.
Right.
They're all too good for it. I would do my best to keep Roman Anthony out there as often as possible. Like, that guy, he's putting together the most professional at-bats on the team. He's 21 years old. He's going to get even better. Again, he's 21. So, and he's a good defender. Like, he does it all. And the ceiling of your team is it grows as he grows. Like, he can carry an offense. That's how good he can be. That said, it's not like I want Duran sitting half the games. It's not like I want Rafaela sitting half the games. It's gonna be tough, and that's why I think that ultimately the solution to this is to use one of those outfielders in a trade to bring you the front of the rotation, say number two starting pitcher that this team needs.
So that brings me to my next question: is which one of those guys is it? And it's not Roman Anthony. Okay, you're not trading.
Yeah.
So then you look at, I mean, Abreu has a lot of value. Rafaela, I think, has a lot of value. Duran, I know, had a down year this year, but teams might look at him and say, hey, 2 years ago, he hit .295.
He's got value.
Last year, he led the MLB in doubles and triples, right? All-star game MVP. Like, he has a lot of value.
Top 10 MVP candidate.
Yoshida's an interesting one in that I think in a vacuum, you could say he has value, but the dude's only played a couple games this year, right? I think if I'm another team, I probably want to wait until the deadline. Can I see 3 weeks of Yoshida looking good? And you still might have to attach a mid-level-ish prospect with him to get a better arm. So which one of those guys, obviously taking Anthony out of it, are you sitting there saying, that's the guy I would move, or that's the most movable guy for a front-end starter?
Here's the thing with Yoshida. I question if there's enough time, even if he plays super well, to get a team to believe that, okay, we can take on 2.5 years of this guy at the money he's making. It's going to be tough. And even if you did convince a team to take him on, or you ate some salary to trade him or whatever, none of the other four guys are DHs. So it's still unfair. Like, you can't DH Roman Anthony. Alex Cora has said it himself. Like, Roman Anthony is not a DH. And all the, like, obviously Rafaela and Abreu are the best defenders in the league at their positions. And Duran, you know, he struggled a little bit in left field this year, but his athleticism, he needs to be in the field. So Yoshida, like, obviously he might be the weak link out of the five, but I don't think he's the guy to be traded, at least right now. We can revisit in the offseason. Yeah. The one that I'm looking at, I just keep looking at Jarren Duran as the guy. And maybe that has something to do with the noise. Like, it feels like the noise has centered around him a little bit more than the others. Maybe Abreu second to him. But obviously you can't deal Roman Anthony. They extended Seydon Rafaela. He's been one of their best players. And, like, he seems like he should just be the center fielder of this team for years to come. I think you should field offers for Duran and Abreu. And unless you get considerably more for Abreu than you would get for Durant, I would make Durant that guy.
And I think the thing for Breslow to, this is to me where it's going to come down to how good a GM he is, because you have those four guys, and Anthony's been in the big league 6 weeks. Durant had a good couple years, but not as good this year. And then Rafael and Abreu have been good, but they're only in their second year.
Right.
Odds are only two or three of those guys are actually going to have full good careers and be good players for 8 or 9 years. And there's going to be one guy in there who we've already seen the peak of. And maybe it was Durant last year. Maybe it's Rafaela right now. Maybe
it feels like you're talking about Durant right there.
I think that's what Breslow has to figure out, because if you trade, and this is something that Dave Dombrowski I thought was really good at, right? You could have traded Devers or Benintendi as part of the package for sale, and you chose Moncada, and you were right. Like, that's something I thought he was really good at, is knowing which guys he could let go of that wouldn't kill them. That's, I think, Breslow's biggest question. Which one of these guys? Because I think if you called up the San Diego Padres and said, we'll give you Willie Abreu and maybe something else for one of your frontline starters, or Atlanta, or if you called those teams and said, we'll give you Jarren Duran for, I think you could make a deal with either one of those guys. But it's which one is going to hurt you less moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, and that's another thing right there. You look at the ages of these guys. Durant's the oldest one.
Abreu's 26, right.
Yeah, like Rafael and Anthony are just kids. I mean, yeah, it's not an easy decision, and you shouldn't take away from the fact that if you take a Jarren Duran away from this team, like let's say they win the game today, 10 games in a row, and they trade Jarren Duran over the All-Star break. Obviously, it makes more sense to do that than it did to trade Rafael Devers. But remember, they traded Devers in the middle of a 6-game winning streak after sweeping the Yankees. And it felt like such an out-of-touch move. That, I mean, even though, again, like roster-wise, it makes way more sense to trade an outfielder right now than it did to trade Devers at the time. But in that clubhouse, how does it make you feel if you trade one of those guys right now? Like, and that's another thing that Breslow's got to take into account. As a former player, that's what he's supposed to have the pulse of. So another factor.
And I think that's a great point, because it comes down to the return for me. Like, if it's the Devers return part two, where it's one guy who might help you this year, that sends a bad message. If it's, you traded Duran, but you got a legit 1A, number two star.
You got Joe
Ryan. Yeah. Like, then it's like
a three-teamer.
Then it's like, okay, we're walking in here and we have Crochet and Joe Ryan, or Crochet and Dylan Cease, and insert guy, whatever. Then it's like, all right, like we're in business in October. Now Bayo's our game three starter in the ALDS, and we feel really good, so.
That's the thing right there. It's like if you can get a guy, Crochet's obviously starting your game one if you make it to the postseason. If you get a guy that you're confident can be your game two starter, and three and four are Giolito and Bayo, like, you're confident. I don't care who you're facing. Every single game right now that Crochet, Giolito, and Bayo start, you're confident with. If you get a fourth guy, who knows how far.
And I also think, just, you know, in fairness, Giolito or Bayo, I don't think both of them are going to keep this up all year.
Yeah, it's
also
insurance.
Because, like, Giolito missed last year. He was terrible after the White Sox traded him in 23. Bayo was up and down last year, had long stretches where he was good and long stretches where he wasn't. Even this year he's had that. So if one of those two can keep it up and you can add another piece, you're in great
shape. Then you feel great. Yeah, you feel great. So, like, it increases your ceiling. It also is a safety net. I mean, Breslow said it with Bradfaw on Baseball Isn't Boring. You can find the episode on his feed. Finding controllable starting pitching this time of year, incredibly hard. Oh. Hardest thing to trade for this time of year. So not going to be easy, but those are the trees he should be barking up.
He is Nat Gordo. Nat, I could sit here and talk to you about this for another hour, but I know
love
we have,
talking sauce.
I know we have to go to break here. It's been a pleasure having you. I'm going to talk Patriots coming up next. So quick question here. Any general thoughts, predictions for the Patriots coming up? Camps just a week away?
Yeah, I feel like, with the strength of schedule this year, everyone's getting really excited. I don't know. Maybe I'm being a downer, but it's like I need to see this team be more than like a 4-win team before I get excited about the postseason.
He needs to see it before he believes it. I don't blame you at all, Matt. This team's won 8 games total the last 2 years. I don't blame you at all. Again, he is Nat Gordo. You can find him, Boston Sports Gordo, on Twitter. Play Tessie Podcast. Baseball Isn't Boring. He's probably walking around your neighborhood talking about the Red Sox as well. You can find him anywhere. Nat, again, thank you so much.
Appreciate you having me.
Awesome. And now it is time to trend with our producer, Jacob Lassen.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margo Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons. And huge thank you to Nat Gordo of the Play Tessie podcast for joining us last segment. I really could have kept talking to him for another hour about the Red Sox, where they're at, the stretch coming up, which is, again, the next 3.5 weeks, July 18th, August 13th, most important stretch of the season for the Red Sox. I am going to talk some Patriots now because, believe it or not, we're just over a week away from training camp. But before I do that, I do want to go to the phones quickly because we have Jack and Ton who wants to talk about the Red Sox before I move on to the Pats. Jack, welcome in. What do you got for us?
How are you? Hands down, the number one move they have to make is getting a backup catcher because Narvaez is great, but he is going to get so worn down in the second half in meaningful games. And Connor Wong, I mean, he might be a nice guy. He can't even frame a pitch, so he's not a defensive player, and he's definitely not an offensive player. I just don't see him sticking around in the second half.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Jack. And I think that backup catcher role, I talked about this a little bit with Megan Ottolini yesterday here on WEEI. That's one of those under-the-radar needs, but I think it's a real one. And look, starting pitching, a number two starter or 1A behind Crochet is the number one need for me. And then bullpen help. Now, maybe that bullpen help will come from a starter being moved to the pen after you make a trade for a starter. Maybe it'll be a straight-up trade for a reliever.
I'm guessing that they have something planned for catcher because they got rid of Blake Sabol today.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point, Jacob. So Red Sox did make a minor move, traded Blake Sabol today. Because, again, Connor Wong, he's hitting 143. He's got one RBI all year. I mean, no disrespect to the guy, but you can't play him, right? And Narvaez should be an all-star. You got a pretty big gap in your capabilities at catcher. And it's hard to find backup catchers. I mean, look around. How many teams in the MLB feel really good about their catching situation? I mean, Milwaukee, St. Louis, L.A., the Red Sox with Narvaez, the Blue Jays. It's only a handful. It's probably a third of teams in the MLB, I would say, deep down feel really good about their starting catcher and their catching situation. So it's not easy to find that number two catcher, but I think that's one of those where a starter is my number one preference. Then if you can get legit help at first base, and then backup catcher is probably that next tier right after that. I mean, you do want somebody that can take the load off Narvaez because you want Narvaez. Again, Narvaez, as good as he's been, I made a campaign, he should be an all-star, is a rookie. Like, we see he could hit a wall. So I am going to get to more Red Sox later on. I want to take a quick break here from the Red Sox, though, and I want to talk some Patriots. Because believe it or not, folks, 10 days from today, Patriots training camp opens on July 23rd. 10 days from today. It's already here. Feels like it's gone by kind of quick. Although we did spend the entire month of March and April talking about Will Campbell's arm length. So I don't know if I want to keep talking about that. But training camp is already upon us, and I think the Patriots, we've seen, and you can, you know, believe what you want to believe and put as much stock in it as you want to, but we've seen some of these off-season grades come out, and one, Seth Walder at ESPN gave him a C+. Those top 10 lists, they haven't had many guys on them, you know, whether it's, you know, defensive tackle, they had nobody, despite Milton Williams having the highest contract in team history. Barmore, really talented player, albeit injured last year. So I think a C+, is a little too harsh for the Patriots this offseason. I look at them as a team that is not great, maybe kind of good, but much better than last year. And I look at where the Patriots are at today on July 13th, and I do feel a hell of a lot better than I felt on July 13th of 2024. And you look at the difference between that team and now. Drake May, I thought, progressed pretty well during the regular season. Now look, 10 interceptions, especially some of the ones in key spots, he's got to clean that up. He's got to get through his reads a little quicker, right? Got to clean up some little things. Got to hit his checkdowns more. He told me that when I talked to him on the afternoon show in late December. So he's got some things to improve, but I think you can feel good about where he's at and hopefully where he's going to progress. I think a lot of this hinges, though, on Will Campbell, because you feel good about Drake May. I think you feel much better about head coach with Mike Vrabel. I feel much better about offensive coordinator with Josh McDaniels. I feel better about the wide receiver group. I mean, it's still a bottom third receiver group, but I mean, last year they were the worst. But a lot of this to me hinges on Will Campbell. Because if Will Campbell is good, and I think he will be a pretty good left tackle, and maybe I'll be wrong. I know there's a lot of people that disagree with me on that. I think he'll be a pretty good left tackle. But if those short arms, 32 and 5/8 inches, come back to bite him, and he's not good, or he has to move into guard, then yeah, we're not going to feel nearly as good about this offseason. If he's a pretty good left tackle, which as I said, I know I might be in the minority in this, I think he can be. Good feet, good hands. I think that matters if you're a left tackle. Good vertical length, 6'6". Could add a little muscle there, though. Then I think you feel really good about this offseason. Because you look at their position groups, and what are the most improved areas on the team? I think the number one most improved area on the Patriots, coaching. Mike Vrabel is a big step up from Gerard Mayo. This is a head coach that's been to the AFC Championship game. He's won Coach of the Year in 2021 in 9 games without Derrick Henry. He went 6-3, right? So he's coached around major injuries as well. And you look at the Titans since he left. Last year, they were one of the worst teams in the NFL. I don't think they're going to be that much better this year. So I look at Mike Vrabel as a huge upgrade on Gerard Mayo. I think Josh McDaniels is a huge upgrade on Alex Van Pelt. Defensively, I don't know if Terrell Williams is a big upgrade on DeMarcus Covington. At least he's got more experience as a defensive coach. I mean, Covington was a younger guy. That remains to be seen. And I do feel good about Jeremy Springer as the special teams coach in his second year. That was the one guy they kept around at the coordinator level, and I feel good about that. So coaching, to me, is their biggest upgrade on this team. Next biggest upgrade for me is at corner. I think Carlton Davis is an awesome signing for them. Like, to me, that's not even a number two corner. That's probably a 1A. And Detroit last year played the most man coverage in the NFL. I think that's a good number two man cover corner. He's not as good as Christian Gonzalez. He's not going to go out there and lock down. If you play the Bengals, he's not going to go out there and lock down Ja'Marr Chase, okay? But if you put Gonzo on Ja'Marr Chase and Davis has to be on T. Higgins, I think you feel okay about that matchup, right? In fact, I'd feel good. Cincinnati's still going to make plays in that game, but I'd feel good. So I think corner is where they've upgraded most with Carlton Davis being added. And I think defensive line, right? I think Keon White is going to have a better year under Mike Vrabel. So I know he was here, but I feel like he's going to be a quote-unquote upgrade because he's going to be better. I think Harold Landry's all right. You know, he had 9 sacks, I think 9 or 10 sacks last year. Pressure rate was low, so some of that might have been scheme stuff. But I think he's a decent player. And obviously you add Milton Williams. Now, Milton Williams, less than 50% of the snaps last year. And he was also playing on a defensive line with Jalen Carter, who I think is a future Hall of Famer, Jordan Davis, Josh Sweat. So he's got some stuff to prove. But I still think you're better there than you were a year ago. And then the next group that I put as an upgrade is the offensive line. And again, a lot of this hinges on Will Campbell, because I think Morgan Moses, he's not going to be great, but I think he's going to be solid. And let's be honest, folks, solid at right tackle is a lot better than what you've had the last few years. So he's going to be solid. I do have questions about Mike Onwenu. I think the pendulum could swing either way with him. I've heard reports he's out of shape. Megan Ottolini talked about that yesterday. Fitzy's talked about that on the afternoon show. If Onwenu is in shape and playing well, he can be one of the better guards in the league. But if not, you got a big problem. I would not be surprised by the end of the year if Jared Wilson overtakes Garrett Bradbury at center. Bradbury, I think, will be a below-average center for you. But again, better than what you had last. I mean, better than what you had last year. David Andrews goes down. It felt like you had no answers after that. Left guard, huge question mark. So that brings me to Will Campbell. If Will Campbell is a good left tackle, and I'm not saying top 5 left tackle, top 10. If he can be the 13th or 14th best left tackle, so just above average to maybe, you know, 11th, pretty good. All of a sudden, you got a pretty good left tackle. You got some stability at right tackle. And then you can maybe have an answer at right guard if Onwenu is in shape, and then your offensive line is better than last year. Again, better does not equate to good. They're still going to have a bottom third offensive line, but last year it was literally the worst offensive line in the NFL. Whether it was sacks, pass rush, win rate, PFF grade, you name it, worst line in the league last year. So I think they'll be better, but a lot of it hinges on Will Campbell. And then my biggest question marks, I think you got to start at safety. Kyle Duggar, because you look at those top 10 lists, like he's been an honorable mention before. I thought, look, he battled an injury last year, but I thought he looked lost at times in coverage. And again, part of that might have been coaching wasn't at the same level as it used to be. I mean, a lot of these same guys in Bill Belichick's last year were a top five defense. Under Mayo and Covington, defense slipped a ton. A lot of the same guys, so does point to coaching. But I thought Duggar didn't play well. Peppers missed some time for that off-field incident. He's past that now, but both of those guys are approaching. I mean, Peppers' case, he is 30. Duggar's approaching it. Both have outs in their contract after this year. So biggest question mark there to me on the team, really, or second biggest, I guess, behind your interior offensive line, it's going to be safety. And I think you got a little bit better there with Craig Woodson, right? Had a bunch of snaps in the deep part of the field, had a bunch of snaps at box safety, played some slot corner. He can play all over the place. So I like Craig Woodson. And I thought Marte Mapu was one of only three players last year that actually got better as the year went on. One was Drake May, one was Joe Milton, the other was Marte Mapu. So I'm interested in Marte Mapu, but I still have some real questions there. So safety, to me, the guy I'm most excited about is a rookie who you picked in the fourth round. And again, no disrespect to Craig Woodson. I actually think he can be a decent player. But that doesn't bode well, I think, for your whole position group. And linebacker, you sign Robert Spillane. Like the player a lot. Terrific run defender. Plays downhill all the time. But beyond that, I mean, Tavai just got injured in minicamp. I think we'll see if he's back for camp. But that's a guy that I don't really like against the run. And he's been, you know, had good moments in pass coverage, and he's had some inconsistent moments in pass coverage. So I have some real questions at linebacker. Like Ellis, to me, is a special teams guy. Again, that's valuable, but it's not, you know, a guy that you're going to put out there next to Spillane. And then I think tight end is another position group that should be a question mark for this team. And I know Hunter Henry's a guy. He's probably a top tight end in the top 10 tight end in the NFL. Maybe he's 9, maybe he's 10, but he's in that neighborhood. My concern is you don't really have anything beyond that. I mean, you look at this tight end, go, Austin Hooper had some good moments last year, but that's a journeyman backup tight end. Jaheim Bell, he's got some nice athletic traits, but he was a 7th-round pick that had one catch last year. So I have a ton of questions about where they're at tight end. So I think as we're 10 days away from training camp here, you can sit here and say, hey, the Patriots will be better than a year ago. But I think the first 3 weeks of camp are going to give us a lot of answers. And I think last year you were interested in the first 3 weeks of camp because it was a new coach. It was the post-Belichick era. You had Drake May. But I think you knew that was a roster. That was a coaching staff. They were not going to be a good team last year. Right? They were going to struggle a lot. This year, I think you can say, wow, this is a team that has the potential to win 7 games. It also has the potential to win 9 games and maybe fight for a playoff spot. And I think the first 3 weeks of camp are going to tell us a lot about that. Is Onwenu in shape? Does Will Campbell look good? Does Bradbury serviceable at center? Do they have a linebacker besides Spillane that I can get excited about? Do Duggar and Peppers look better than a year ago, especially Duggar? You know, how do they look? What are they doing at slot corner? Is it Marcus Jones? Or do they want 3 safeties with Craig Woodson? Like, you're going to find a lot of that out. And I haven't even mentioned wide receiver yet. How does Stephon Diggs look? A guy that in half a season last year was better than any Patriots receiver in a full season. How does Kyle Williams look? We've seen the Patriots struggle year after year after year to draft young receivers. Well, I mean, most of that was Belichick, but even look at Elliott Wolf drafting Jalen Polk and Javon Baker, who gave you nothing as a rookie a year ago. So can Kyle Williams finally be a decent rookie receiver? I mean, I think the last time they had a good rookie receiver was probably Malcolm Mitchell in 2016, and then he got hurt in 17 and never played again. So what's going on at receiver, right? Is Jalen Polk and Javon Baker, can you combine for one good player out of those two? Because I think that's another, and we're going to find, again, a lot of those answers in the first 3 weeks of camp. Because camp starts 10 days from now. You know, you have a couple weeks of camp, then you have that joint practice on August 6th. Then you have a preseason game. At that point, you're a few weeks in. And I think we're going to have a lot of answers then. So I know there's been years, especially over the last 25 years, you know, when they had Brady and they were good. Training camp was about, hey, can they come together? Can they stay sharp? Because they're going to be a team that's going to contend for a Super Bowl. Then the last couple of years of Belichick, it was kind of like, hey, what's going on here? Like, let's see. Are they going to be good? Are they going to be not? Let's see. Last year, it was, okay, it's Mayo. This roster's not good. Let's just see what Drake May is. Can we be excited for the future? This year, I think there's a lot of either position battles or real questions that you can kind of get an answer to in those first few weeks of camp. So that's my 10 minutes on the Patriots. Jacob Laster, you have any thoughts on the Patriots?
The Patriots, they're there.
Yeah. So we'll see. It's an interesting thing. I was talking about this with Nat Gordo off the air, that it's a rare year where I think there's more buzz right now around the Red Sox than there is the Patriots 10 days away from training camp.
Proven by my statement.
Yeah. And also, too, I think the Celtics getting eliminated early kind of factors into that as well. It's a whole nother heartbreaking discussion. But I think, again, this Patriots training camp 10 days away, there's a lot we can learn from these first few weeks. So if you have the opportunity to go down to Foxborough and witness a training camp practice, I know I'm going to be down there for WEEI, looking forward to it. But if you have the opportunity, I would say take advantage, because I think there's a lot more going on and there's a lot more to learn in these first few weeks than maybe in the past few years, and maybe in a long time, just because of where they're at as a coaching staff, the overhaul. I mean, half their roster's new. And some of the key young players, whether it be May, whether it be potentially Craig Woodson, whether it be Will Campbell, whether it be Travion Henderson, some of the key young players that they are really hoping, maybe Caden Wallace and Layden Robinson too, that they're hoping will contribute. And that's something to watch. So stick with us here at WEEI. Be right back after this.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right. Back here on WEEI. I'm John Lyons. Approaching the 12 o'clock hour. If you've missed any of the show, you can hear it on WEEI.com, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio app, Odyssey app, you name it, you can find it. Talked Red Sox for the first hour, had Nat Gordo on at 11, he was great. Talked a little bit of Patriots last segment. I'm also going to be joined in about 25 minutes by Red Sox pregame and postgame host Joe Weil from Fenway to talk more about the Red Sox as he gets ready for the pregame show down there at Fenway. But we got some calls. You get some texts here, 617-779-7937. We're going to go to the phones first, then the text line. Let's start with Stephen Fall River wants to follow up on our Red Sox discussion from earlier. Steve, welcome in.
May I start with a few comments quickly about the Patriots? I'll do them quickly.
Sure thing.
Who was the quarterback? Who was the quarterback from Miami that went to Tennessee?
Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill.
Okay. Strip out Ryan Tannehill's career in Tennessee, then look at Mike Vrabel's record. I'm not going to quantify that. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah.
I will quantify it. Any success he's had, he had Ryan Tannehill, the quarterback. That kind of makes me a little skeptical about.
I think it's a compliment to Vrabel. I hear what you're saying, Steve, because I think Tannehill's not good. Tannehill was never really that good until he went to Tennessee with Mike Vrabel and Arthur Smith.
So why didn't he do that with everybody else he had?
Well, I mean, when he was having terrible quarterbacks besides that, it doesn't help. But they've gotten worse since he left. So, and I hear what you're saying. I know they were better with Tannehill than without him, but I think,
you have to, to me, it's a weight down. The running back that was taken in the first pick of the running, Gentry, what was his name?
Ashton Gentry, yes.
Running back.
Patriots see him week one.
Here's the comment. They should have traded out and then taken this Gentry. If they were going to take a running back that high like the Patriots did, they were better off getting something else for Campbell and taking this running back, because the difference between him and the running back the Patriots took is going to be way bigger than the difference between any tackle that was available after we took our running back and this kid we took at four.
Great story.
That's what I'm here to tell you. Okay, that's what's going to happen. I shouldn't say that's beyond a doubt, but I'm pretty certain that's what's going to happen. About the Red Sox, I'm glad we have the College of GMs. I'm using this alliteration on a Sunday, or comparison on Sunday, to the College of Cardinals there. We have this infinite, vast reserve of GM knowledge out there in Red Sox Nation, and they've all decided to weigh in on what the Red Sox have to do, who's going to go for what, who's worth keeping, who's worth blah, 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 blah. But there's no accountability in Red Sox Nation, because half of them would have re-signed this knucklehead in San Diego at shortstop and would have re-signed Devers and called it a day. Yeah, we signed big contracts. We're all set. We got $100 million contracts. We're doing the right thing. No, they complained when the Red Sox drafted, held on to their assets, didn't trade them at these previous trading deadlines, because we have no
idea
what they were offered or wasn't offered. So on this trading deadline, if the right deal comes along, they don't have to get rid of one of these outfielders. If the right deal comes along, I'm going to put my trust in that they're going to make it, because I've been trusting that this system that they've had in place that no one wanted to hear about.
Steve, thanks for the call. I gave you a couple minutes there. I had to move on. I got some other people waiting. Appreciate it, though. Yeah. Patriots points, you know, revisit them in a moment, because we got Dan in Rhode Island wants to talk some Patriots. Dan, welcome into the program. What do you got for us?
How you doing, Phil? I'm in the minority of this, but I really don't care how many games they win this year. That's not the goal, because I don't think they're, you know, a competitive team. I think this is a rebuild, obviously, multi-year. What I want to see is the beginning of a core that's going to be there 2 or 3 years from now, when hopefully they are a true contending team. You know what I'm saying? Like, these free agents are all nice, like Spillane and a couple other guys, but they're not going to be here in 3 years. They're not going to be the core of whatever this team becomes when they're competitive again. I want to see Campbell be the guy. I want to see maybe Williams be a wide receiver. And even that, you know, the kid in the defensive line they got from Philadelphia, he's young, right? Isn't he pretty young, like 25 or something?
You talking about Milt Williams? Yeah, he's 26.
Yeah. Okay. He could be the free agent that could be part of the core. But I just don't really care. I mean, I want to see progress. It can't be worse than last year. But I just want to – the drafting is what's going to make this team competitive 2 or 3 years from now, not these free agents. It's not built that way. So you got May and you got Gonzalez, maybe Barmore. You know, that's really it right now. Everybody else is unproven. So hopefully moving forward, you know, we add a couple more to the core in 2 or 3 years from now. This is a really solid team, and you're adding pieces to the core, a guy like Diggs. That's all I'm saying.
Dan, you have a good day. Thanks for the call. And I think, look, his point about drafting, he's 100% correct. Like, they're going to – the reason that they have not been good the last couple of years is because from 2017 to 2022, they were one of the worst drafting teams in the NFL for 6 straight drafts. Like, that's the biggest reason that they were won 8 games the last 2 years. So that is something we need to see more young players improve and more young players make an impact. And you have May, you have Gonzalez. And look, I would disagree. I think you got to win 8 or 9 games this year, at least a minimum 7. But really, you got to win 8 or 9 for people to feel better about this team. But I will say, to his point, as part of that, I think you want to walk away from this season with a young core that you feel good about. Like, you want to walk away from this season feeling good about Drake May. Like, maybe he plays 17 games and has 10 interceptions, whereas last year he had 10 interceptions in 13 games. So does he play 17 games and have 9 or 10? A little bit better. Do you feel good about Travion Henderson? Do you feel good about Will Campbell? Do you feel good about Milton Williams playing over 50% of the snaps in a major role? Do you feel good about Carlton Davis and Christian Gonzalez together? Do you feel good about Craig Woods? Like, can you feel good about 4 or 5 of those young players? Can you feel good about them? And hopefully more, but at least 4 or 5 of those young players can you feel really good about and build around that? Because it's been a long time since we've had 4 or 5 young players on the Patriots that everybody felt good about. Really? I mean, I don't know. You might have to go back to 2016 when you felt good about Joe Tooney and James White and Malcolm Butler and Malcolm Mitch. I mean, it's been a little while since you felt good or really good about 4 or 5 young players. Going to take a quick break here. Coming up on the 12 o'clock hour. Again, I am going to be joined right around 12:15 by Joe Weil from Fenway Park. Got another segment coming up before that, though. So we'll be right back here on WEEI. Been on here since 10 a.m. Enjoyed the show so far. Got to talk about a great Red Sox win yesterday, in which Garrett Crochet, first career complete game. Roman Anthony, double. Narvaez, RBI, single. You win 1-0. Toro, big play in the field. Just really great to see. And I'm going to be joined in about 10, 12 minutes by Joe Weil, who is the Red Sox pregame and postgame host here on WEEI. He's down at Fenway, so looking forward to that. Also talked a little bit of Patriots, and we talked a little bit of MLB All-Star Game. If you didn't know, today is the 26th anniversary of the 1999 All-Star Game at Fenway Park when Pedro dominated the first 2 innings of that game. I would argue the best 2 innings a pitcher has ever pitched. Those first two innings, Pedro threw in the 1999 All-Star Game. 617-779-7937. That's the phone line. That's the text line. I've already got several of your calls. I want to go to the text line. Our producer, Jacob Lastner, has that up. Jacob, what do you got on the text line for us?
So a lot of talk about the Red Sox trading outfielders. Let's see. We got squeeze the Padres. They're pushing hard on Jaren. Clean him out.
So I was wondering when the Red Sox traded Rafael Devers, if they couldn't have used him in a Spencer Strider or Dylan Cease-type trade with one of those two teams. Now the name is Duran. And the Padres have been aggressive on Duran from all reports. Sean McAdam talked about that earlier this week, that they have been aggressive. And from the Padres' perspective, you have a superstar in right field in Fernando Tatis Jr. You have, I think, one of the best young players in the major leagues in center field in Jackson Merrill. Left field has been up and down for them. Like, Gavin Sheets has had some good moments out there, but they've also had some moments of not real production from their left fielder. All of a sudden, you had Jaren Duran out there. You're talking about a lineup top to bottom, and Bogaerts has been hitting a little bit better there. Maldonado's been hitting a little bit better. Arise has been hitting better over the last month. You're talking about one of the better lineups, I think, in the MLB. Obviously, Duran not as good as he was last year, but he's a great base runner, a guy that can stretch a double into a triple. I think for the Padres, I can see them wanting to do that. If I'm the Red Sox, I'm only trading Jaren Duran if I'm getting a starter back that's going to start game two of a playoff series. Because for me, game one of a playoff series is Garrett Crochet. Game three, I would love Brian Bello to be the starter. But I am only trading Jaren Duran if I get the guy that's going to start game two of, say, the ALDS. That's it. All right. Jacob, what else we got on the text line?
We got people talking about the Patriots tight end. I agree linebackers are a weakness. They are good with the tight end position. I think Hooper may have a big year. And at running back, Henderson is going to lead the team in total yards.
I don't know if I'd go as far as to say Henderson's going to lead the team in total yards, but I do think, to me, Henderson's a guy that we might sit here in December and he's the starting running back of the Patriots. I think there's a ton of potential there with Travion Henderson. And you look at him, once he gets the ball in his hands in space, he is extremely difficult to bring down and catch up to. And that's an element the Patriots haven't had out of their backfield in a long time. He had 1,000 yards last year on the ground, 10 touchdowns, only 26 catches, but did have 280 yards, never fumbled. I don't think that's a coincidence after Stevenson's fumbles last year. A really good pass blocker too, which I know some people might roll their eyes at, but that gets you on the field on all three downs if you're a good pass blocker. So Henderson's a guy, I don't know if he'll lead the team in total yards, but I wouldn't be shocked if by December he's either your starting running back or he's getting a ton of snaps. I think he's going to end up being a fan favorite as well. Austin Hooper at tight end, I'm just worried about the depth there. Again, like, I think Hunter Henry is that fringe top 10 tight end type guy. I mean, 674 yards last year. He had 9 touchdowns in 2021, which is the last time he worked in the Josh McDaniels offense. He's a captain, turns 31 in December. But I just look at Hooper, maybe you get one more decent year out of him, but I'm not sure. And then, I mean, they bring in Jack Westover, who might be more of a fullback. G. Scott Jr. was a wide receiver recruit at Ohio State. We'll see if they keep him around it all in camp and if he can be a pass-catching tight end. Gene Bell, one catch last year, I'm not sure. Jacob, we got one more on the text line there?
Yes, we do. We have a lot of people did not like that you were saying the MLB. I was
hoping
that
you would bring that up, because I know obviously for pronouncing the whole thing, you don't say the Major League Baseball. You sound like an idiot. But when it's an acronym, an abbreviation, there's some schools of thought. Like, I'm reading the Chicago Manual of Style right now that says if you're using it as a singular adjective, like you're saying someone is the best player in the MLB, then you can use the in front of it. So I don't know. That's what I go off of. I try not to sound like an idiot, Jacob, on air. Like, to be clear, I would never sit here and say, oh, he's the best player in the Major League Baseball. That just sounds weird. But the MLB, it's abbreviation. So, and I've seen both sides of it. So I don't know if there's any English teachers out there that want to call and text and tell me the right way to say it. Right? The National Football League, the National Hockey League, but you don't say the Major League Baseball. I don't know. People get really upset about that too, Jacob. And I know, I guess it's my job to communicate, so I should, you know, make sure I get that right. But if you're an English teacher out there, feel free to call in or text in. Let me know. Unless, Jacob, were you an English major in college?
Ah, that's funny.
Yeah, so no. At least, hey,
But I was a communications major. So
okay. But you don't know the answer to that?
No. Okay. I would consult the AP style book. Yeah. I don't know.
Who knows?
What does Chicago know about
that? Maybe that person texting in was, you know, an English professor at Harvard, and I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know. I'm just telling you what I've read.
I would assume as much.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones here. We have Cole in New York. He wants to talk about Jarren Duran and the Boston Red Sox. Cole, welcome in. What do you got for us?
Hey, good morning. It's actually Carlo, but Cole's, I've been called worse. I was looking into a deal. I don't want Duran to leave the Red Sox. He's super popular. You can't have enough speed, right? But Red Sox Nation could possibly look at a deal. I was looking at the Padres. They got a prospect catcher, Ethan Salas. If you can get, he's coveted. He's looked at as a future star. He's 18.
Yeah, I think that's their number two rated prospect, unless I'm mistaken.
Correct, and he's a catcher, right, too. If you could get him along with somebody else, et cetera, and then three-way trade it to get a pitcher like a Joe Ryan and make it enticing enough, I think Red Sox Nation could look past it. Because what you've been talking about is so imperative, where the Red Sox, I believe, with Bregman coming back and Yoshida, they have enough offense. But what they don't have is that solid number two. I'd love to see Bello go into the third position and Giolito in the fourth, because all the big boys out there, they all have that stud number two pitcher, the Yankees, et cetera. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I appreciate the call. And I think if you're going to get a legit number two starter, especially at the trade deadline, I just think the fact is you're either going to have to include Duran in a deal, or it's going to be Yoshida and prospects, or it's going to be multiple higher level prospects. Like, it's going to be something along those lines. And I just, my philosophy is I want Rafaela and Abreu in the lineup and in the field every day. They're great fielders. Abreu's your best power hitter right now. I don't expect Rafaela to hit 400 the rest of the year, but he's been hitting 400 in July. You want to keep in the lineup as much as you possibly can. And I think you want Anthony in there as much as possible. So then it comes down to Duran and Yoshida. And I'm only trading one of them, by the way, if it's part of some return that includes a game two playoff starter. I'm not trading them for the Devers package part two with one guy that might help you this year. Let's take one more call before we go to break. I know we got Joe Weil coming up next. We sent out the bat signal, Jacob, and I think we got Batman to call in, because Rich in Amherst is a writer, and he's going to tell us the right way to make sure we pronunciate MLB or the MLB. Rich, who is right here?
Yeah, you're doing it right.
Yes.
Yeah, you're doing it right.
Jacob, record that. I'm doing it right.
The operable word is league. So you're saying the National Football League, the National Hockey League, the National Basket, or association. But the baseball is not in the same category. Major League Baseball. You would say the major leagues, but you wouldn't say the Major League Baseball, because the article is referring to league.
Love it. Rich, thank you so much. Appreciate that. See, you send out the bat signal and you get Batman to call in. I don't know, three college degrees later, I should have probably known that anyway, but I appreciate Rich. I really do. Rich, thank you very much.
Another English
call.
Teacher calling.
Yes. Imagine if we get like a battle of the writers and battle of the English teachers all calling in. Oh, would be fun. But as I said before, Joe Weil is down at Fenway Park. He's going to be on pregame for this final game of the first half of the season for the Red Sox. He's going to join us next. We're going to talk all things Red Sox. We'll still take your calls. We'll still take your texts, 617-779-7937. In fact, one person here says, what can you get for the password, if you're not familiar with him down in AAA. I don't know. Maybe that guy's part of a package that gets you. But singularly, I don't think you're getting a high-end pitcher for him. But we're going to trend now with Jacob Lastner. We're going to come right back with Joe Weil. Big shout-out to Jacob Lastner, doing a great job producing. Produced the show yesterday as well. Jacob's been a busy man.
I'm having the time of my life, John.
Love to hear it. We even got him to wear a Red Sox hat, so I guess we're making progress there. He's from New York, if you didn't know. That's right. He couldn't help it. He was born there. We're joined now, though, by the one and only Joe Weil from Fenway Park. He's in the center field Ford Clubhouse studio getting ready for the pregame show. Joe, welcome in, man. How are you?
John, thanks for having me, and great job by Jacob. He asked for what instrumental I wanted coming back, and I'm fired up right now. The Sox are going for their 10th straight W, and that bass line from Hey Now, it's off Kendrick Lamar's last album. That's what I wanted to come in. I'm fired up, ready to talk to you, and ready to talk on pregame, too.
So, Joe, you do the pregame and postgame just about every night during the season. You've done it for years, and I think for those that listen to you regularly, you're a pretty fair guy in your analysis, and it felt like a few weeks ago the frustration was really building for you and for all of us in Red Sox Nation. And it's been almost a total 180 over these past couple weeks, obviously 9 games in a row, going for 10 today. What do you think have been the biggest factor or factors in this turnaround that they've had?
Well, it's a couple different things. I mean, I think they've hit on all three phases here, John, extremely well. They're hitting, obviously. They've had some really timely hits, obviously, in this series against the Rays with the walk-off on Friday. They get one run, which was all they needed yesterday, and then some timely hits in the first game against Tampa Bay. Before that, they were just killing teams like the Rockies and the Nationals, and they were swinging it so well in those series. I think what's a really underrated storyline in all this is the starting pitching. And I'm excited to talk about Brian Baio in our pregame because he's figured it out. Like, his season has actually been really solid, and he was a guy that I think a lot of people were frustrated by, and I think rightfully so, at the beginning of the year, because he still hadn't put it all together. He was walking way too many guys, and the changeup and the feel on that pitch wasn't there. That's all changed recently, and I'm excited to see how he closes out this first half. But obviously, the headliner's Crochet. He's been amazing. He throws a complete game shutout yesterday, which was awesome to see. But you add in Lucas Giolito, too, and what he's been able to do over his last 6 starts. I mean, 3 earned runs in 38 and two-thirds innings. And what's been incredible, too, is, like, John, he's put himself in a class of Red Sox pitchers that you would have laughed at, you know, 6 weeks ago if you would have mentioned Lucas Giolito alongside Chris Sale, Pedro Martinez, Roger Clemens, and Louis Tiant as guys that had a 6-start span of at least 38 innings pitched in 3 earned runs or fewer allowed. So the pitching has really come around for this group. Obviously, it stinks that they've lost Hunter Dobbins now for the year, and they have to figure out who takes over that spot. Is it going to be Tanner Houck? Is it going to be put back in the rotation? Is it going to be Richard Fitz just filling that spot? We don't know quite yet. Or do they go out and get an arm? But the pitching has really impressed me. And that's a narrative flip that I didn't expect from the time that you're referencing, John, when you heard me kind of be melancholy about the season. My whole perspective on this has changed, and it's because of how well they've been playing recently.
Yeah, and Joe, I think the pitching has been the driving force. I mean, Garrett Crochet, for my money, is the front runner for Cy Young right now. I mean, 3rd in ERA, 1st in innings, 1st in strikeouts, 4th in WAR among starting pitchers. Like, I think he's the front runner. Baio, ever since the calendar flipped to June, has been a different guy. You just ran through the numbers on Giolito. But I do want to ask you about those three guys, because Crochet has thrown 129 innings this year. He threw 146 all of last year. We've seen Baio break down last year and be inconsistent. Giolito missed last year and pitched really poorly at the end of 2023 when he was with the Angels after that trade. So what is your confidence level that these three guys or any of them are going to keep up this level of play as we get into the second half of the season?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question. And interestingly enough, the part of it that I find most fair is the Crochet one, because of the fact that he is really going to be hit in uncharted territory coming up with the amount of innings he's thrown. And, you know, that the team keeps pushing him because he feels comfortable being pushed, and he's been awesome. I mean, he answered the bell once again yesterday with the team having thrown a ton of innings, that being the bullpen, you know, the day before, and he goes out there, throws 100 pitches, and tosses a complete game shutout. So I think that that's a fair question. As it's related to the other two guys, with Lucas Giolito, right, and you look back to 2023, I feel like at this point, and hopefully I'm not wrong, but I feel like at this point we can start to throw away the bad Lucas Giolito, the guy that wasn't effective on the mound and that really did struggle at the end of that year, and then, of course, at the beginning here in 2025. I mean, I think the fans, rightfully so, were like, okay, we signed this guy off of a down year. He didn't pitch at all last year, and now he's been bad. And that's completely changed. He has been incredible, and I think he's been part of why fans, in my opinion, should start to actually feel confident about where this team is heading. As for Brian Baio, I think he's, again, started to figure out. Now, do I think he is ever going to be a dominant one John, no. But I think he can be a three. Like, he can be a really good three in a rotation. And honestly, these last seven outings for him, he's pitched like a two. He's got a 2.78 ERA in this span. He's tossed six quality starts, and that's actually including every start that he's made. One of those, if you remember, was like after a suspended game, he came in and finished that out against the Reds. So my confidence level with those guys is actually in a pretty decent spot. I think the Crochet one does concern me a little bit. You know, if he does wear down at some point, because they've really needed him. But thankfully, John, they've actually won his starts. That's been another key. They weren't winning enough of those early on, and now they are. And yes, yesterday was really him because they only scored one run, but he got some help from the defense. And again, this team is just in a really good spot right now.
Yeah, and Joe, I would also make the case that yesterday was the most important start of the year for Crochet. I mean, you use seven pitchers.
It feels like that every time, John. That's the interesting thing. Like, I feel like every time I come on and do a pregame show and we talk about Crochet, it's like, all right, they really need to win this one. But that's the urgency level you need to have with an ace. It's like, okay, we got our guy on the hill. We have to do everything in our power to win this game because he's going to put us in the best spot.
So the All-Star game's coming up on Tuesday. Red Sox have three All-Stars, Crochet, Bregman, Chapman. Crochet's not going to pitch. We already know that. We'll see if the other two get into the game. Was there any thoughts from you, Joe Weil, of, you know, Narvaez should have made it, Rafaela should have made it? Like, do you feel like the Red Sox should have had more than the three guys that they have going there? Or do you think these three are just right?
I think in the end they're just right, although obviously I would have loved to see Rafaela or Narvaez. But I think, John, what I do think has really happened is that I do think over these last couple weeks, the greater baseball world is starting to realize that Seidon Rafaela is an all-star caliber player and possibly like a superstar caliber player. And one thing I talked about in a show I did prior to the start of the season, it was like one of my spring training shows, I just looked at last year with Rafaela and what he was able to do while being a sub-average bat. I mean, there was so much that needed to be cleaned up about his approach to the plate, but he was almost three wins above replacement. And I remember saying, God, if he's just an average offensive player, this guy, his floor is four wins above replacement. He's already at 3.9 according to Baseball Reference. Like, that's how good he's been this year. And then as it's related for Narvaez, I think he was the guy that I was expecting, okay, maybe he could join that group and be the fourth. He's been incredible. I mean, it's so much more than we could have ever expected. The bat to me is obviously where the bigger surprise has been, because we knew he was going to be a good defensive catcher. Like, that was his profile when he was with the Yankees, and their people would talk about how much they like the defense. But the bat's been amazing, and he's a guy that you just feel comfortable with in the middle of the lineup. I mean, the fact that he's stabilized that four spot in a lot of games, John, where it seemed like everybody that they put there, you know, all these guys that had shown that they could do it at the big league level. First it was Casas, then they would put Story there. These guys with track records, and then here comes Narvaez. They place him in the four spot, and he's really held it down. Maybe he hasn't been quite as good as he was a little bit earlier in the year, but I think he's still swinging a really respectable bat, a really good bat, an above average bat for a catcher. So three probably makes sense, but I think if the voters could redo it, maybe they would find a way to get at least one of those two guys in, because I think what we're starting to find out is this team has a lot of great young talent, and it's going to be fun to watch them grow as the season moves on. A
few minutes left here, Joe. Last question from me. The Red Sox have this stretch coming out of the All-Star break. Toughest schedule in the major leagues. Cubs, Phillies, Dodgers, and after that you're going to have games against the Astros, the Padres. In that first month or so back, that really difficult stretch, what do the Red Sox, in your eyes, Joe, need to do to show that they are a legit playoff team and that this is not the last couple years?
I feel like they've already shown that, John. I mean, I feel like this team is different than the ones from years past. And I remember talking last year about, you know, when they hit the All-Star break, they held one of those wild card spots. And I was feeling good about the team, but the context of last year was always, they're performing above their weight class. They are punching above their weight. They're doing way better than we all expected. Whereas this year, we've all been disappointed about where this team has been for a significant portion of the year, and now they're finally playing to a level we kind of expected them to be. The route that we've gotten here is completely off the beaten path in terms of where I thought they'd be. Obviously, I didn't expect them to trade Rafael Devers. Who could have seen that coming, at least coming into the year, even before all this? I'm talking really all before, you know, the controversy with that began, but I think now that they've shown that they should be a team that can buy. I mean, even if they lose this game, okay, they had won 9 straight prior to it. They'd still won a series against a team that they're going to be competing with for at the very least a wild card spot. And listen, like, the division's still in play. They're only 4 games back of the Blue Jays, who, as well as they've played recently, their run differential is a plus 20. I still don't think anybody in this region looks at the Yankees necessarily as world beaters, even though they have a better record right now. So to me, I think they've shown that. Obviously, if it absolutely craters here, you'd have to change the conversation. But I don't expect that to happen. I think they're going to stay somewhere in this range of like 5 games to 7 games over or possibly better. And I think they're going to have to do something at the deadline to bolster this group because they want to make a move. They've been saying that. I mean, I know they haven't like fully outwardly publicly been like we're 1,000% buying, but they have made indications of that. And with the way this team is playing, I don't know why you wouldn't do that.
He is Joe Weil, Red Sox pregame and postgame host here on WEEI. You can catch him in just a few minutes with the pregame show. Joe, really appreciate you taking the time. Thanks very much.
Of course, John. Glad to be chatting with you again, and hopefully we can finish this first half strong.
Yes, hopefully. Red Sox have their final game of the first half of the season today, 1:35. As I said, Joe Weil will be on pregame in just a few minutes. Seeing if they can finish off this first half of the season with 10 consecutive wins. A great spot to be because that stretch coming up, and I'm going to be on the air. Next time I'm on the air is going to be Friday night. I'm filling in for Arcan, and we're going to be one game into that stretch I've been talking about. So I'll talk to you then. In the meantime, stay tuned for Joe Weil. Stay tuned for Red Sox Rays. Stay tuned for the Greg Hill Show tomorrow morning. For Jacob Lastner, our producer, I'm John Lyons. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your day.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.